So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What is up, 960 The Ref listeners, fans, friends, whatever you want to call yourselves. This is another exciting edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. You know how to follow us on iTunes. We said that ad nauseum now, so we'll just expect. And you know what? We do respect our fans enough to know we don't have to say that over and over and over again because you guys are smart.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, everyone knows how they can find us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 960theref.com and on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe. And give us some likes, five-star likes, because, you know, we like you, you like us. It's a nice little exchange, and we very much would appreciate that. But, Brame, we've got a lot of business to get to. Sam Franco and, of course, Chris Brame, along with you. The Dogs are going to the national championship game in Atlanta to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide after Georgia won what I'm just going to say is the greatest football game I've ever watched in my entire life in the Rose Bowl with that Oklahoma lead in the first half and then the Dogs to overcome all that. I mean, that was truly a remarkable and incredible football game.
Yeah, and I think it's the best Rose Bowl that there's ever been.
One to ever go to overtime.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the Rose Bowl following the 05 season, so I guess, you know, January of 2006, that Texas and USC game was actually for the national championship. This was to advance to the national championship, so obviously that that one between the Trojans and Longhorns was a little bit bigger because it was for the ultimate prize, but I still think this one passed it just in terms of the contrasting styles with the two teams. You had a great offense and a great offensive coach in Lincoln Riley and a great defense and defensive mind in Kirby Smart. So you had the chess match going on between those two. Every single star player in that game had a huge game, from Baker Mayfield to Chubb, Michelle, Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter had a big day for Georgia too. So the star players all shined bright. The chess match between the coaches and just the explosive plays back and forth between the two. Yeah, I mean, the game had it all. Even if you weren't a Georgia fan, an Oklahoma fan, if you were just someone that wanted to kick back on New Year's Day and watch the Rose Bowl, there's no way you weren't entertained by that.
No, absolutely. And, Bram, I've got a surprise for you. I've got some California grass here, and I'm not talking about the newly legalized.
No, you didn't go in any
California
of those shops.
Grass. No, I did not.
You didn't suddenly develop glaucoma or a sleeping disorder?
I did not. That is grass.
That smells good.
From the field on the Rose Bowl. There's some confetti sprinkled in there, too, from the celebration. But live here on the crossover, Chris Brame is smelling the Rose Bowl turf.
Yeah, it had never been played on. They laid that turf down. That was the first game, and I guess it's probably going to be the last game played on it, too, right?
It really does smell good. I mean, this is like a couple of days old now, so it seems like it would go funky, but just smells like good, clean grass.
Yeah, and it's good that it's good, real turf. They don't lay down that artificial stuff.
And you can see some of the grass has a little red painting on it. Yeah, that's right from the middle of the field on the Rose.
Okay,
so
excellent.
Yes, that will be a souvenir. I mean, it'll die and go bad eventually, but I'm going to put it in a jar or something. And even when it starts to look decrepit, it'll still have the species of confetti sprinkled
in
there. So definitely an awesome, awesome experience to get to go out there. I was only really in California for about 24 hours, but just one of the craziest 24-hour periods of my life. And we'll obviously get into the game itself, the nuts and bolts, and talk about Alabama coming up. And I do want to mention the Falcons briefly at the end of this podcast.
Well, they are in the playoffs.
They are in the playoffs.
Yeah. I think they're going to win, Sam, if you want just a quick take.
Well, it's hilarious because the Dogs just came from L.A. and it being in the playoffs, and now the Falcons are going to L.A. to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, so, to play a team with, you know, Todd Gurley on it and Alec Ogletree.
That is a team, yeah, exactly, both of whom We're celebrating the Rose Bowl, by the way, along with Quavo from Migos, who seems to just be a part of, like, Georgia's program right now. I don't know if the athletic department has given him an official title or anything yet, but he seems to be around a lot. But just, again, an incredible experience. The flyover with the stealth bomber was incredible. Being in the stadium for that thing was so cool looking coming up over the stadium. And then that national anthem done by the military guys. It was one of the best national anthems I've ever heard. It's everything about the Rose Bowl. They know how to do this correctly. I mean, they've been doing it for, this was what, the 104th edition of the Rose Bowl. So they have a lot of practice.
Yeah, and that's why they call it the granddaddy of them all. And it's always been on that, it's the New Year's Day time slot, 5 o'clock. There's no other bowl games conflicting with it. It stands alone, and that's why it's always been one of the most watched and highly rated ones. And it, you know, Oklahoma and Georgia definitely... It lived up to the hype and the billing. It was a fantastic game, and I think it's the, you know, it's obviously not Georgia's biggest win ever, because that still has to be, you know,
it'll be coming up this weekend.
Well, hopefully,
or,
Monday night.
If they win.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, as of now, it's still beating Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl for the national championship. But I think that's definitely, that's the best game Georgia's ever won.
Well, I agree. I mean, that's the thing. So much of the storyline going into this game, or the storylines, rather, were completely, like, neutralized or didn't come to fruition going into the game. Georgia can't win a shootout with Oklahoma. Well, they did. You know, Baker Mayfield's going to have to win this game for Oklahoma because, you know, they're not going to be able to do anything else. Rodney Anderson ran for 201 yards. You know, Georgia's defense is going to be able to, you know, hang tight with Oklahoma. And, you know, they started to play much better in the second half, obviously. Only allowing 17 points in the second half and overtime, as opposed to the 31 they allowed in the first half. But everything that seemed to be like, this is how this team's going to win, or this is how that team's going to win, didn't really happen.
Well, the one thing that did happen, and it was why I liked, it was the main reason why I liked Georgia to win the game and thought that they would, is Oklahoma's defense was one of the worst in the country in allowing explosive plays. They ranked 109th in the country. And when you look at that Sony Michel touchdown run for 75 yards, was the fifth play they had allowed this season of more than 70 yards. You know, they ranked in the 90s and the 100s and just giving up big plays. So their defense's inability to stop teams from having those explosive plays was what I thought was really the big edge that Georgia had, and why Georgia was not a great matchup for Oklahoma, because of Georgia's explosiveness on offense. And, you know, when you, you know, to give Oklahoma a little bit of credit here, and maybe this, you know, also transfers into the matchup on Monday night with a much better Alabama defense, is it certainly doesn't seem that way because of all the big runs that Georgia had. But
that's the worst run defense I've ever seen in person.
But here's the thing, though. Oklahoma's defense actually, and, you know, the same goes for Georgia's defense against Oklahoma's offense. I think both of those defenses did a better job than it certainly looks like they did. Here, and I'll point this out. After Chubb's 50-yard touchdown run, he had 6 yards on his next 7 carries.
Yeah.
And so, like, when he had 14 carries, and more than half of them, Oklahoma actually stuffed them. And the same goes for Michelle. But it was those big explosive runs they couldn't stop.
That's the thing. You've got to be able to stop both.
Right. And that was the Achilles heel of Oklahoma's defense the entire season. And Georgia absolutely ended up exploiting that. And that's why they won the game.
On Sony's 75-yard touchdown run, the hole that the Georgia defense opened up, you could have fit 2 Mack trucks side by side to get through that.
Yeah,
hole.
And the same for that 38-yard run that he had when they had a 3-man down line, and Fromm saw it and checked into that play, gave it to him, and then Michelle was gone. I mean, like, no one touched him.
Unbelievable. And look, that's where I want to start, because we'll get into all the drama and everything happened in the overtime. But the primary storyline, well, there's two real primary storylines from this game for me, and I'll even say 3, I guess, when you talk about Lorenzo Carter's blocked field goal. But it was Jake Fromm and his ability to make plays as a freshman of the Rose Bowl, and I do want to get to that. But right now, it's Sony Michel. I mean, 4 touchdowns, you know, over 220 total yards on the game. And again, the guy had one of the greatest games in Georgia history, and it would have been a damn crime if his career at Georgia had ended with that fumble and Oklahoma had gone on to win the game. But he got a chance at redemption, and what does he do? Wins the game for Georgia in the Wild Dog when he just breaks left and just blows by everybody on Oklahoma's defense, takes it into the end zone. What a remarkable accomplishment. And really, this game was won by the seniors that returned. You look at the big plays. Nick Chubb, 145 yards, two touchdowns, including the 50-yarder where he broke like a million tackles. Sony Michel, I just mentioned all his stats. Dominic Sanders with the interception, which I called, by the way. That has been corroborated on Twitter, the two guys sitting next to me in the press box. I said on that drive, Georgia had just tied the game. I'm like, Mayfield's going to make a mistake here. He's going to try to do too much. And he did. Threw it right to Dominic Sanders. Georgia gets a touchdown on that drive to take the lead. And the other guy, Lorenzo Carter, blocks the field goal. The seniors that came back won the game for Georgia.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how the whole season has gone.
Right.
It's been those guys that have carried the team. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of this team all along. And to the point of, you know, Chubb fumbling or Michelle fumbling the ball and them scooping and scoring. And you're just thinking like, boy, that's going to be tragic if that does end up being how this season ends, is with one of the great players ever, Sony Michel, ending up his fumble. And it's the difference in the game. But, you know, these different units have picked each other up all season long. And, you know, like the Missouri game, that was the first time all year Georgia's defense, I think, didn't put in an A-plus effort, but the offense almost set a school record for yards in a game. And so, you know, in those moments when the offense needed to bring it, they brought it. When the defense needed to bring it, they brought it. And the special teams have pretty much been, you know, they've aced every test so far this season.
No, Rodrigo, he now holds the record for the longest field goal in Rose Bowl history at 55 yards.
It's crazy. Because like 15 months ago, that guy's first field goal in Oxford, Mississippi was like, I mean, he was, you know, because you see this guy come out and he's got these goggles on and he kicks that field goal in Oxford. And suddenly, I mean, this guy's like a Twitter meme, and not in a good way. And 15 months later, he sets a Rose Bowl record in a national semifinal for a 55-yard field goal, which was...
Which should have never happened, by the way. Oklahoma completely screwed themselves. And that's the thing. Not only did they screw themselves for just that part of the game, Georgia might not have won the game without that. I mean,
that's 3 points in a game that ended up in overtime.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was just a terrible way for Oklahoma to do it. But, yeah, no, I mean, it just... All of the players that Georgia needed to have big games in this game... Had big games.
Big games. And, I mean, again, those guys, we've said that every week this season. The guys that needed to step up and bring it have done it all year. Now, I mean, to get back to Fromm as a true freshman and the way
he played.
That's
where we'll transition to next because we've done the Sony thing already.
I think he's the key to Monday night against Alabama.
Oh, absolutely.
And it goes back to, you know, talking about the explosiveness on Georgia's offense and being able to exploit that with Oklahoma's defense. Alabama this year has given up one play all year long of more than 50 yards. They've given up 12 plays this year that have gone for more than 30 yards. Now, to put that in perspective, Oklahoma gave up 39. So Oklahoma's given up more than three times more plays of 30 or more yards than Alabama's defense has. We're not going to see Chubb and Michelle just like running through this wide open green space Monday night. And when you to go back and look at some of Chubb and Michelle's runs against Oklahoma, there were a lot of times. I mean, there were half the times that Georgia ran the ball and were sitting there in second and nine and second and long situations. And, you know, that's where Fromm's going to have to deliver, because I think you're going to see a lot of that Monday. Georgia's going to try and run, of course, because that's their bread and butter. But, you know, there might be some times that Chubb and Michelle aren't picking up those big yards, and Georgia's in some of those second, long, third, and medium situations where you're going to have to lean on Fromm to keep doing what he's really done all year and be efficient and be really good.
And I'll say this. He didn't have a tremendous first half. He wasn't as bad. I mean, he had some drops. He did have some overthrows.
I think he was nervous, and a lot of his stuff was sailing.
And I think the play calling in the first half was kind of atrocious. I mean, they threw the ball 17 times versus running it 11 times when they were averaging like 20 yards per carry.
Well, I know that, but I think when you go back and you look at the play-by-play and watch the game again, you'll see that
they were working on something.
Well,
they were trying.
And Georgia did have the big runs. But there's enough evidence there to support. And I mean, my point is that Chubb's last seven runs, he picked up a total of 6 yards. So he had 1 yard on first down. He had 1 yard on first down. He had no yards on first down. So he had these moments where Georgia's in second and long.
And Fromm had to do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, which would support that, I don't know, maybe Georgia didn't necessarily need to just be running it every single play.
But still, I mean, it seemed like there were some interesting play calling. But look, that got corrected. Adjustments were made. Georgia wins the game. And staying on Jake Fromm here, And since this is a podcast, I can say this. The balls on that kid. I mean, to go into the Rose Bowl as a freshman and to make some of the throws he made, the touchdown pass to Javon Wims, he threw that thing in such a tight window over like three Oklahoma defenders. I mean, to do that in that moment is just unbelievable. And then the play of the year for Georgia football, in my opinion, so far, was the play in the fourth quarter. Georgia's driving to try to tie the game after the, you know, scoop and score from Oklahoma that just almost broke your back. Fromm takes the team pretty calmly, you know, down the field. And then there's that play where he's in the pocket, pocket collapses. And I don't know how he didn't get sacked. But he doesn't get sacked. Finds Sony Michel over the middle, dumps that thing. I think it was a third down, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and look at the play.
Yeah, I remember the play. I don't remember the down, though.
But for him to do that in that moment, I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable that he's able to make that kind of play and have that kind of presence as a freshman.
And to get rid of it instead of just deciding to take off
right.
And keep running himself. I thought the for me, the throw of the day that he made, though, was on the 3rd and 10 on the Georgia's last drive of regulation where he just threw that dart to Godwin.
Oh, yeah. Another great one.
Because I thought the pass to Wims in the end zone was – yeah, that was a great throw, but, I mean, the catch was
– it was a great catch.
That was like a Julio Jones-esque
catch.
Well,
he put it – because of those Oklahoma defenders that were in the area, Fromm put it in the area where only Wims could go get it. He had to make a
hands.
Play, but he did.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Fromm's been doing that all season with Wims. They've developed such a chemistry to where Fromm's like, I'm going to put it in a spot – and my guy's going to go get it.
Honestly, Wims is going to be – and I know Georgia still has a game to play, so I'm just going to say one quick thing about 2018. The thing with Chubb and Michelle leaving is Georgia's got DeAndre Swift there. I'm telling you, the player that Georgia will miss more than any next season is Javon Wims.
Oh, of course. I mean, the chemistry, like I'm talking about there, the chemistry that they've developed as a unit, as a 1-2 punch there has been truly remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, we know, like, next season, you know, hopefully Zamir White gets healthy pretty fast and recovers from his surgery. But you got DeAndre Swift coming back in the running game. I think we all know Georgia's still going to be able to run the ball. But, you know, the season that Wims have had and as reliable a target as he's had and as sure-handed as he's been, you know, to me already kind of, you know, thinking ahead now to 2018 a little bit. It's, boy, I mean, who's going to replace really Wims as that go-to guy in the passing game?
I was actually on a first down when Fromm hit that to Sony, but still,
yeah.
I mean, in that instance, if you take a sack there, that's brutal.
Yeah, I mean, second and long, though.
Yeah. So, I mean,
probably going to punt.
For Fromm to have done that, and then, you know, Nick Chubb gets the touchdown there. It's funny, there was, when Chubb got the touchdown, there was 55 seconds left. And I believe that was a Wild Dog play, direct snap to Chubb when he runs it in there. So, I mean, just remarkable for Georgia there. And somebody asked me, do you run here? I'm like, hell yeah, you run here. You're on the 2-yard line, and Oklahoma can't stop the run.
I know. I mean,
there's only 55 seconds left, but yeah, that's the play there. You run it, and obviously
my beef was that I thought Georgia, you know, they kind of hurried to the line there and ran that play. I would have liked to have seen Georgia maybe use a little more time there because 55 seconds is an eternity in college football.
Oh, it was. And that last drive with that 55 seconds left was excruciating.
Yeah, because they had all three timeouts,
they
too.
They did, but thankfully the Georgia defense stood up real well there. And getting into the overtime here, because I, for one, hate college overtime. I think that what the NFL's done now with making it sudden death unless it's a field goal scored by the first team, then the other team gets the ball back, I think that's much better. I would still say that you should probably give both teams the ball regardless.
Yeah, both teams should get the ball. That's
right.
still my one beef with the NFL.
Right, but I still think it's better than college because – college is, to me, bastardizes the game.
Yes,
I mean,
I agree.
You've completely changed a lot of fundamental elements of the game.
Yeah, you take defense out of it almost.
Right, but I will say this about Georgia's defense in that scenario. Where the secondary can be questionable sometimes, in that short field, only 25 yards, that's the perfect scenario for Georgia's defense because you're not having to worry about people getting in behind the secondary.
Sure. But I mean, Oklahoma, their play calling in that overtime, I mean, they're starting to run side-to-side stuff.
Oh,
they tried
stupid.
To run that option with Murray. Then they ran that H-back just across instead mm-hmm. of – I'm like
– It's like Lincoln Riley probably got a little too cute, was getting into his own head.
I think maybe Georgia's defense got into his head because Georgia's defense – and I'm not trying to, like, suggest that Oklahoma's play calling is why they lost and not give Georgia any credit. I think Georgia's defense and the job that Georgia's defense did in the second half of that game might have gotten into Riley's head a little bit, but ultimately the game Rodney Anderson had, and you've got the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback there, boy, all of a sudden they took the game out of Mayfield's hands and Georgia stopped him. I think they should have gone for it on that 4th-and-1, even when they were already down a field goal in overtime. And I know if they don't get it, the game ends there. But, you know, you got 1 yard with that offense. And I could just tell you this, as a Georgia fan who wanted the Dogs to win Monday, I was glad that they attempted that field goal there instead of attempting to pick up that 4th down.
That was such a nervy, like, 5 minutes there where they exchanged timeouts, you know. And like,
I thought the kid was going to miss it. It was a weird angle.
Yeah, and he made that one.
Yeah. But I smelled something was going to happen there. And even with that second kick, I just had this feeling that he was either going to miss it or Georgia was going to block it. Cause I felt
but it just happened a little later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the second one when they ended up, and that one, I mean, you have to take cause the down and distance was longer, but they should have gone for it on that 4th-and-1 in that first overtime.
You know, I agree. I think that was a bad call on their part. And I just, you know, for Georgia's defense to have bowed up there as well as they did in the second half, other than the one drive where Oklahoma tied the game again.
Yeah, they gave up 7 points. That was mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. So it's just that first overtime was a little, you know, because Georgia got the ball first, kicked the field goal, and I'm like, oh boy, you know, that isn't good. But Georgia, thankfully, like you said, held Oklahoma to a field goal, and then Oklahoma goes first and the second overtime, and Lorenzo Carter, man, I was standing right there in the overtime. So, you know, they don't switch fields or anything. They just go, you know, one way. And so I was standing basically for the whole overtime in that corner, like right there. And it felt like Lorenzo Carter's hand was in the air for eternity. I mean, the way that he hung up there and was able to knock that thing down. And I think, you know, that at that point, you know Georgia's going to win the game. Maybe something could have happened where you turn the ball over or something. And I thought, I mean, the thought popped in my head. Do you just kick the field goal now? I mean, on first down? But they didn't do that.
No, I mean, not with the Georgia's running backs and Oklahoma's terrible defense. I mean,
well, they lost 2 yards on first down.
Well, that was at that point when they lost the 2 yards on first down. Well, no, then you're starting to worry. After Georgia blocks the field goal, I mean, your frame of mind is like, holy cow, I mean, we're going to win now because, yes, at least Georgia's going to kick a field goal. But then all of a sudden you lose 2 yards and it's 2nd-and-12 and you start thinking, well, if Georgia loses any more yards, then you're getting
dicey.
Then Hot Rod's going out there, and that's a dicey kick for him then.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, thankfully Sony Michel takes that ball in the Wild Dog there, and you know, as soon as he got the corner, I think you knew he was good.
Yeah, like even even though at that point the game was tied and all Georgia needed was a field goal to win, I did not want to leave it up to a field goal attempt. I'm glad Georgia just got the touchdown there, and that was it. There was no doubt about it because and Hot Rod's had a great year. He's a terrific kicker.
But now
still,
putting it in his hands.
In those
there,
situations yeah. where it's like, okay, this is a field goal to win the Rose Bowl. I'd prefer having Sony Michel run it in from 27 yards out.
You know, I totally agree with you. That is something that we here on the crossover are totally in agreement with. So just an unbelievable game. I mean, and for me, I tell people, you know, I flew out Monday morning from Atlanta at 8 a.m., got back to Atlanta yesterday at about 5 p.m., So
you left the day of the game?
Yes.
8 a.m. So what time did you get to L.A.?
About 10:15 L.A. time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had, because I guess what kickoff there was at 2?
2:10.
So you basically went straight airport, straight venue.
Yes.
And came home.
other than going to the hotel and eating In-N-Out Burger after the game.
Oh, you did have a hotel there.
I did, yeah.
Oh, so you stayed a night, okay.
Yeah, I did. I stayed the night in Pasadena at La Casa Inn.
All right.
It was a very interesting hotel to say.
And grab some In-N-Out Burger.
All right, I did grab some In-N-Out Burger.
I noticed that you ran into Kevin Smith.
I did. Yeah. And hey, Kevin Smith is my good luck charm now. First person, basically, I see once I get off the airplane is Silent Freaking Bob.
Right.
He's dressed like Silent Bob. He had the backwards hat on, the trench coat, the hockey jersey, shorts, and like slip-on shoes. I'm like, why is this guy walking? He is Silent Bob.
That's how he dresses. Like, I see him on, sometimes he's on that show after The Walking Dead, The Talking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
He's a, I guess he's a super fan of The Walking Dead. That's how he wears a big hockey jersey. And he wears that hat. I mean, that's how he dresses.
He had the Silent Bob jacket on too. I'm like,
oh, he really? Okay.
Does this guy just hang out at the airport and want people to take pictures with him? I mean, I don't get it. But like, I walked. There were some people taking pictures with him, and I was just kind of looking at him. And he like, you know, it was like paparazzi style, but not really paparazzi, just like people. And he was like, we can take a picture to these guys. And so I heard him say that, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get mine.
Yeah.
And so I went up there and got the selfie with him. Nice guy. I mean, I talked to him for like 5 minutes. I didn't really have 5 minutes, but I was like, okay, I like this guy's movie, so I'm going to stand here and talk to him for
sure.
A second.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I mean, Clerks, Mallrats, Dogma, Chasing Amy, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I mean, these are movies that were like part of my childhood / growing up. So great to meet him. And yeah, he couldn't have been nicer. So my trip obviously got started off on the right foot, running into Silent Bob at the airport.
Like, did he ask you, like, hey, you know, what are you doing here? And you're like, well, I'm.
Well, I had a Georgia shirt on at the time. I switched to my ref polo once I got to the stadium. You know, to make sure everything seems unbiased, correct? Because we're journalists.
Right, absolutely. When you're in the press box, there's no cheering, man.
That's right. But trust me, when I got down on the field, ain't no not cheering on the field. So that was one thing. But, yeah, just to everything was so crazy. I mean, running into Kevin Smith, then driving straight to – well, I didn't drive straight to the stadium. I had to go pick up my parking pass from a hotel downtown. So I went and did that and then drove straight to the Rose Bowl and just – again, an incredible experience. I know a lot of Dog Nation was out there and got to celebrate that win. But, I mean, it's incredible that Georgia hadn't been to the Rose Bowl since 1943. They go back, play one of the greatest college football games ever played, and now you've got it all on the line against Alabama. So you're playing an SEC team in Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a championship. But it's not the SEC championship. It's the national championship.
No, it's like Georgia's already done that. It was in the SEC championship game. It is crazy. Like Georgia, you think about what this team's already done this year. They've won at Notre Dame. And bear with me. I understand Tennessee and Florida were terrible. They fired their head coaches. But, you know, Florida's won, what, three national titles all time.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee's got a couple. Tennessee's in the top 10 all time in wins. So Georgia's won at Notre Dame. They've won at Tennessee. They won at Florida. They beat Auburn for the SEC championship.
Avenging a loss that happened earlier in the season.
And they beat Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. And like, oh, guess what? You're still not national champs.
No.
Now you have to beat Alabama.
But I'll say this, and this might be my bias coming through. If Georgia beats Alabama, wins the national championship, they will complete the greatest college football season of all time.
That's one of the great all-time hit lists. Yes, there's no doubt.
You think about it. You won at Notre Dame, crushed all of your rivals. I mean, crushed Florida, crushed Tennessee, crushed Tech, crushed Auburn
once
you got to rematch them in the SEC championship. Beat Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl, and then you have a chance to beat Alabama? No doubt. That's in my opinion, that is the greatest hit list of all time
in one single season. In one season to do that. There's no doubt.
No, absolutely. So Georgia's
got us all time. You look, Notre Dame is with third all time in wins, plus however many national championships. Alabama's in the top 10 all time in wins. Tennessee's in the top 10 all time in wins. You know, Florida and Auburn have got combined. They've won like six national championships or something. Oklahoma is in the top 10 all-time in wins. That hasn't been done.
No, absolutely not.
That's an all-timer resume. And again, keep in mind, too, none of those games at home. Every single one of those games either away or on a neutral field.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. Looking at that Alabama-Clemson game, the only thing I saw from that game was the fat guy touchdown. You know, there were other things going on in my life to where I didn't really get
it
to watch
it. It was your typical Alabama game where they just smothered you.
They strangled them.
Yeah,
they just put them out, and that's the thing. I think Georgia matches up well against Alabama for a few reasons. The only team that beat Alabama this season, Auburn, had a somewhat mobile quarterback in Jared Stidham. Guess who's just as mobile as Jared Stidham? Jake Fromm. So I think that Georgia might take some things from Auburn there. utilize from maybe a little bit more in terms of the rollouts, in terms of trying to make the Alabama defense guess. Because that's the thing. When you keep this defense guessing, if they do, most of the time Alabama knows what you're going to do and they can stop you. But if you can keep them guessing, keep them honest, then, you know, that's how you beat this team.
Well, yeah, and I think that's why Fromm is a true freshman. I think there's a lot of weight on his shoulders in Monday's game, because I think Alabama's going to be able to, as great as Chubb and Michelle are, Alabama's got the number one run defense in college football.
Well, and Fromm makes these decisions to pull the ball out on these read options. That's where he's going to have a big load on his plate, is do I just let Sony get there, or Sony or Nick or whoever, or do I pull it and run myself?
You're going to see a much different game Monday than the one we watched in the Rose Bowl. I mean, Alabama's offense won't be lighting up the scoreboard against Georgia's, but Georgia won't be doing the same. We're not going to see Chubb and Michelle just running and, you know, wide open time and time again like was the case in the Rose Bowl against Oklahoma. But here's the thing. Alabama's played now this 6 of the last 9 national championship games. And but for Georgia Monday night, I think this is an even matchup.
I do too.
And Georgia's,
although I will say this, Alabama's going to be without starting linebacker Anfernee Jennings. See, that was came out earlier this morning. You know, he is out with a knee injury, so that's a huge hit for the Alabama defense.
Yeah, I mean, another injury. They've had a ton of injuries on defense this season, but, you know, it's still Bama. They've recruited well. They've been able to overcome it. But that's just the point for Georgia to arrive in that game Monday night playing mighty Alabama and not feeling that you have the inferior team, because Georgia doesn't. And that says a lot, because, again, this is the 6th time in the last 9 years that Alabama's playing in the national championship game.
I know we usually run for about 30 minutes on this. We're going to go a little overtime today because the Rose Bowl went to overtime, so it makes a little sense. Okay. We've got some other things to get to here. Obviously, Georgia-Alabama's going to be incredible. You know, hunker down, fans, get ready. This week's going to be nuts. Get over to Atlanta. Go experience the fan fest. I'm telling you, do whatever you can if you're not actually going to the game, which I know a lot of fans aren't because of the absurd ticket prices. But go enjoy everything down there, because, I mean, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences. So hopefully not once-in-a-lifetime for Georgia fans now with all the momentum the program's got. But trust me, you're going to want to be as involved with this as possible. All right, switching gears here from the national championship game to a team that is claiming a national championship. That is the Central Florida. Is it Golden Knights, I believe?
Yes.
Give me a damn break. Like, are you kidding me? Their AD's declaring national champion. Scott Frost is talking about some conspiracy theory to keep them out of the playoffs. Just shut up. Just stop. It's absurd and laughable. And it's funny because this is a school from Orlando, which is the same place where Disney World is. So they're living this Disney fantasy, fairy tale of, oh, you know, everybody should be equal. We went undefeated, so we should be the national champions. If you had Auburn's schedule, by the way, I don't really put anything in them beating Auburn. You know why? Because it didn't mean anything. These bowl games, the only reason they mean anything is to the players. They get to have these experiences. They get to go help in the community. That's great. But in terms of the actual, on the field, what it matters for the season, it didn't mean anything. And Auburn didn't want to be there.
Central Florida's hanging a national championship banner, they've announced. And
that's
their claim in the argument, is they defeated the team that beat both Georgia and Alabama.
But so Georgia beat them back.
So they're undefeated against a team that defeated both teams that are playing Monday for the national title. So Central Florida's there. And look, I mean,
you can't use bowl games as that kind of. You can't use that game. It's not the same thing as beating them in the regular season.
This is why college football is so great, because you've got schools that have done this, and they certainly aren't the first. The team they beat, Auburn, they're like, well, they want to claim the 04 title. They were undefeated. Oklahoma State's got one that they claim. They were undefeated in the 1950s. Alabama's done it before. They've got to claim all these national championships they didn't get. So now Central Florida wants in on the fun. But here's the thing about Central Florida, though, is all these schools, you are participating in this system that is in place now.
And you agreed to the
system,
by the way.
You're agreeing to the system because you're participating in it. And, yeah, the system left you out of it. And you went undefeated, but it left you out of it. Now Georgia and Alabama are playing. So that'll be the team that that 99% of civilization will recognize as the national champion. And then Central Florida can hang their banner that says that they were, even though they really aren't.
Well, for Scott Frost to cry conspiracy theory is just a joke. And, by the way, it's like – he's crying conspiracy theory as he's already left for another job.
Right. Central Florida's such a – they're the national champs and it's such a powerhouse program.
Yeah, if that national championship meant that much to you, you wouldn't be leaving. I don't care if it's for your alma mater.
Yes, it's head coach
no
is
coach
leaving.
Leaves if they just won a national championship.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's – I don't know. It's fun, though. That's what makes college football so good. But here's what I know about Central Florida. They'd be at least a two-touchdown underdog to the two teams playing Monday night in Atlanta. They were a double-digit underdog to Auburn. And
what would Central Florida have done with Georgia's schedule this year? What do you think, honestly?
Let's see. They would have lost at Notre Dame. They would have lost at Auburn. I mean, they might have beaten Florida and Tennessee.
They might have because
they would have been very good. I think Central Florida is a good team. And, you know, it's funny because, like, then on the other side, it's how many teams would go undefeated against Central Florida's schedule? And
a lot.
But you know what's funny is, like, well, Georgia and Alabama didn't because they both lost to Auburn and Central Florida beat them.
That's fair, I guess. But, I mean, it's just this stupid scenario where, like, they're crying about this and everything, and it's like you don't have the resume to be on the level that the teams are playing for the national championship.
Well, and they're participating in the system that shows four other teams ahead of them to be in it.
I almost wish they had gotten into the playoff, though, just so and played like Oklahoma or something, just so they would have gotten smoked. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think they probably would have lost. Yeah, I don't. I mean,
I do
think
they're everything to play for, which is not what they played in the Peach Bowl against Auburn.
Would be, yeah, I mean, different. And it just they would be a double digit underdog to both teams playing Monday night.
Exactly.
So
it's cute. Central Florida wants to do this, claim national championship. That's fine, but it's meaningless because they won a meaningless game against Auburn in the Peach Bowl.
Yeah. And, I mean, if Georgia wins Monday or if Alabama wins Monday, I don't think anyone outside of Orlando is going to be questioning Georgia or Alabama's national championship status.
Well, it's like Scott Frost is talking about the conspiracy of the committee to leave them out. Well, then why in the last AP poll were you ranked 12th?
I think there is a conspiracy to leave them out. It's called television ratings.
Well, right.
But
that's the thing, though. I mean, if there is this conspiracy, why were they ranked so low in the AP and coaches polls as well?
And Monday's Rose Bowl, it was like the highest rated Rose Bowl since the Texas and USC game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Central Florida had been in that game, I don't think it would have scored as high a rating.
Yeah, I haven't seen the rating number for Auburn and UCF, but I'm going to assume it wasn't great.
Yeah, at noon on New Year's Day, probably not.
Probably not. All right, last but not least here, we will address the Atlanta Falcons as they are heading to Los Angeles to take on the Rams this weekend. And, Brame, earlier on the podcast, you said that you think the Falcons are going to win. I don't. I don't think they're going to be able to stop Todd Gurley. This run defense has been better this season, but they still have gotten gashed at times, and I really do feel like Todd Gurley's going to run all over them. And if the Falcons do sell out to stop Todd Gurley, that might be a mistake because Jared Goff has actually been pretty good this year.
And the Rams do have a good defense. These two teams met. It's so funny. These two teams played a year ago in the regular season.
The Falcons whooped them.
The Falcons whooped them because of the Rams' incompetence. I mean, mm-hmm. they fumbled that opening kickoff, and mm-hmm. the Falcons got it on the one-yard mm-hmm. line. This was actually for as high-powered as Atlanta's offense was last year, the Rams actually forced Atlanta into the most three and outs. I mean, funny, offensively, the Falcons had one of its worst games a year ago against the Rams. But here's the NFL playoffs. And this, you got a former MVP. In fact, he's the reigning MVP, Matt Ryan at quarterback, against Jared Goff in his second year. And while Goff has transformed, thanks to Sean McVay, into a he's definitely not a bust. I don't know. To me, the playoffs are all about QBs. And I think the Falcons are going to go in there and win. The Rams don't have a home field advantage. I think that's something else that benefits the Falcons.
You don't think the Coliseum is a...
No, I mean, no one in L.A. cares about
the
Rams.
One, you don't have to worry about weather. Like, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it might rain, but...
And it ain't like you're going to play the Saints in the Superdome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not... It's not like they're head over heels in love with the Rams being back there in L.A. So, yeah, I think the Falcons are going to win.
Yeah. I mean, I hope you're right, but I am going to keep expectation low, and quite frankly, I don't really care if they do or not, because I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl, and Georgia is playing for the national championship on Monday.
So. I know, that's the thing. The Dogs are in the national championship game, so unfortunately for the Falcons, who cares? But I think the
well, Tech fans that are Falcons fans, maybe.
Right. The Super Bowl is going to be the New England Patriots, obviously, are going to be there.
I think the Rams are going to get there.
And no, the Rams aren't going to get there. It's either be the Saints or the Vikings or the Falcons. So there you go. There's half the NFC field.
I still don't trust Case Keenum. He might
that's
be.
That's hard. I know. Again, the reason why it's a playoff. So that's why when I look at the NFC playoffs.
That roster's perfect other than that, though.
You've got basically between the Panthers and Falcons, the last two teams that won the NFC, mm-hmm. the last two NFL MVPs at quarterback. And then with the Saints, you've got a Super Bowl champion quarterback and coach. Already with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, so I get those are the bottom three teams in the NFC playoffs, but I think one of them is getting there.
We'll see. We will let all that play out. But Brame, next time we chat here on the crossover, hopefully it is about a University of Georgia national championship, the first since 1980.
I think it's going to happen, Sam.
I do, too.
I do.
I don't want to, like,
I mean,
come out and, like, say that.
I don't feel as obvious. I really thought Georgia was going to beat Oklahoma.
I refuse to throw a prediction out for
I was pretty confident about that. I mean, I think this is a toss-up game. And, I mean, again, that's all you could ask for when you're going to play Alabama, because they have been the team in college football, and I think all you can ask for in a matchup with them is to at least go in there believing that our team, we have as good a team as Alabama. And that doesn't mean Georgia's going to win. I mean, Alabama has just as good a shot to win Monday night, but, you know, I think Georgia's got a really good chance to do it. The way this Georgia team has been running this year, I wouldn't bet against them right now.
I wouldn't either, because it just seems like whenever the chips are stacked against them or the deck's stacked against them, they find a way to win. They find a way to grind these games out. Kirby has said it all season long. Keep chopping wood. And that's what this team does. They just stay at it. They keep working at it. And eventually, their skill level and the players that have been most important to them do something to win these games.
And I'm legitimately not trolling here. Obviously, Clemson is the best team Alabama has beaten this season, winning the Sugar Bowl over them. But in the top three is Fresno State of teams Alabama's beaten this year.
They have not had the hardest schedule to deal with.
Because it's either you got Mississippi State, LSU are two of them, because they didn't beat
Georgia's
Auburn.
But Georgia's easiest to be the best team they'll play all season.
Right, and that's my point about like what Alabama's accomplished in their resume leading up to this is one of their best wins is against Fresno State.
Yeah, that's That's something that definitely I think we'll talk about more and more on our shows. Mind the Morning Show, Brame's the home team here on 960 The Ref for the rest of the week. But for now, we will leave you with hoping and praying that the Dogs can win the national championship on Monday. He's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with either a very happy or a very sad episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.